Blog Talk Radio.
From music to murder. Every time I come up, somebody pulling me down. I got my mind on my money. The feds keep chasing me.
Welcome back, welcome back. Ladies and gentlemen, for the part two, Mr. Foster Quarter is on the line with me right now. Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, wherever you may be in the world. How are you doing this evening?
Hey, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Thank you for calling back in. It is a pleasure to have such a super cool, divine person in the universe back on the phone with me. I really appreciate it. And all is well. Did you enjoy your turkey day, your giving of the same?
Absolutely. Yes, I did. Yes, I did. And you?
For me, my brother, every day is Christmas, every day is Thanksgiving, every day is my birthday.
That's right.
I don't have to wait till one
That's
particular
right.
day. I eat every day. I'm happy.
See? Exactly, man. We're on the same page with that. You know, every day is Christmas, man. You know, it was so funny because I was talking to someone today. I bought something for my grandson. It was a little tent. And they said, oh, you're going to give it to him for Christmas? And I was like, Christmas, that's 30 days away. No, none of us are guaranteed to see Christmas. You know, so Christmas is today, you know. So it's like I'll do Christmas on Christmas, yeah. So, but thanks again for having me back, man. It was a pleasure, you know. The last time I was on your show, a lot of friends said, well, Foster, you talk so much, you didn't give him a chance to ask you any questions.
This is a beautiful exchange of minds, and I don't have to ask a lot of questions. If you just want to just narrate your life, I'm cool with that too.
Yeah.
This is like me looking at a document, really, to be honest with you, in your own words.
Uh-huh.
So we're good. I am good. I appreciate them. Shout out to those people, but this is all about you right now.
Oh, well, thank you, man. Thank you. You know, we're still working on the funds for the movie, which was why you had me on in the beginning, Old Timers Day. You know, that's number one right now for us is, you know, putting that together to try to bring that to the big screen and little screen and DVD and all of the rest, and streaming and everything else, you know. But, hey, I got to ask you, Makita told me, and just for those who don't know, Makita is Jasmine PR. She's who put us together in such a wonderful spirit. She told me that you're a photographer.
Yes. Photographer, a videographer, that nature, yes. So I could feel
yeah.
when you were talking about different aspects of putting things together, I was just like, oh, yeah. And vibration.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. So, well, that's great. That's great. I'd love to see some of your stuff sometime too. Yeah. You know, cause this is a two-way street, but, so that's the interest right now is getting Old Timers Day, and we're putting a package together to talk to investors and things of that nature, taking a couple of meetings, here in Hollywood, which is really, really interesting. The one thing that has happened so far with the meetings that I've had is it is proven that the project is hot. It is viable. It is something that is totally different because it's sports fantasy, it's faith-based, you know, and it's action, you know. So the movie covers a lot of ground and a lot of genres. So I'm excited about that, you know. So no doubt it's going to happen. And just for those of you out there who are wondering what is Old Timers Day, you can go to the Facebook page. It's Old Timers Day, or the website is Old Timers Day. Old Timers Day is a book that was written by Richard Lopresto and Jerry Schaefer, and it is about God speaking to Richard about a baseball game that takes place between Satan's team and God's team. And they both pick players from the 100 greatest players to ever play the game. 100 great players, they're in the Baseball Hall of Fame. And I can't tell you who wins. You have to read the book, see the movie, but I'll say this. Satan refuses to have any players from the old Negro Baseball League on his team. So, right there, that tells you who's at a disadvantage. But what else can I share with you today?
Okay, cool. I'll just clear out everything. That's absolutely dope. Tell me about your connection with legendary basketball player, Mr. Wilt Chamberlain, who also could go down in history as the great, along with Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson. How did that come about, meeting these?
Okay, for sure. Well, that was a highlight of my life, for sure, spending 17 years with Wilt Chamberlain. And I would have to say he would have to go in there, for me, ahead of Michael Jordan and Wilt Chamberlain. But, you know, just the way that the league is set up, you know, is business, just like everything else. So they have to position it and play it so that the current generation, whatever that is, feels like they're seeing the greatest players of all time. You know, like right now it's LeBron, you know, but when you compare LeBron's game to Jordan's, when you compare what Jordan did to Magic, each one of them had their time. Each one of them has, you know, what they're good at. But Wilt Chamberlain, you know, most people still don't know that he holds more NBA records than anybody. And I mean, the last time I checked, he had 52 records, you know, and something like that. And probably now the way that, you know, they change all of the stats and different things, he's probably still holding at least 45 of NBA all-time records. I mean, only got an average 50 points a game and a whole bunch of stuff. And, you know, his 100-point game, that'll always stand at the top. So just – so when you say – you know, I don't like to compare. Each player has his time, but Wilt Chamberlain was a special man. They don't make him like that anymore. You know, he spoke several languages. He had been around the world and, you know, every place that you could imagine and did everything. And he was a man's man. You know, the one thing that I learned from Wilt was you don't lie. You don't lie to anybody unless you're afraid of them, you know? And I pride myself on, you know, having to not lie because I'm not afraid of anybody. But Wilt and I, our relationship started in Santa Monica, California. I was the teaching pro at the Santa Monica Athletic Club. I was the racquetball pro at that point in my life. Sports has always been a little bit, you know, somewhere in the back of what I do, either whether it was cycling or racquetball. And so I was the teaching pro at Santa Monica Athletic Club, and Wilt came in and he saw me, and it shocked him because there weren't a lot of African Americans playing racquetball, and particularly at that level. And I was teaching a lot of the Hollywood community, you know, celebrities and stuff, Dick Van Patten and you know, several other actors. So we start playing together. And one thing led to another, and we ended up starting to play celebrity tournaments as doubles partners around, you know, the Hollywood and Valley area. And that led into us with the motion picture Conan. And, you know, I did a documentary called The Legend of Jesus Christ, I'm getting confused with Dolomite. That was The Legend of Dolomite. I just got brain locked. Well, the bottom line is I'm working with Ruth Robinson on a new project, which is called Walking with Wilt. And that is basically stories of my memories of 17 years with Wilt Chamberlain and interviews with different people who knew him and his friends. So it's going to be a TV special on some network. We're just putting it together right now, but that's the next thing that's coming out. But he was my guy, you know. Wilt was, he was a very, very, very special person.
What's your, if you can share with us, what's one of the most memorable experiences you had being with him?
With Wilt Chamberlain?
Yes, Wilt Chamberlain.
Wow, that's the most memorable. That's a tough one, G, because there was so many, you know. Everybody talks about his female prowess, which was true. You know, that whole 20,000 women thing with the book, that got misconstrued and taken the wrong way. He wasn't saying he had been with 20,000 women. What he was saying is that if the average guy out here has been with 100 women in his lifetime, which the average guy hasn't. The average guy probably maybe been with 10 at tops, but if the average guy was with 100 women, he has been with 20,000. And that's what he said, and it got taken out of context, which was true. He was a ladies' man. I mean, and we have to understand that he came up in a different time during the 60s and free love and women burning bras and all kinds of other, you know, things that were happening during the time that he was a superstar. So, and he was tall, dark, and handsome, and rich, and all of the rest. So, it's not so much as now people would look down on it with all of the AIDS and all of the stuff going on, you know, he was in a different time. But one of the most memorable experiences is, you know, that seeing that as we traveled the world, seeing how women were attracted to him. But we were on the set of Conan, and there's a scene in the movie Conan, the Destroyer, with Grace Jones and everything. We were in actually we were in Juarez, Mexico, shooting, because the film was shot in Chulabusco Studios in Mexico City, and Juarez and some place outside of a volcano. I can't forget the name. Can't remember the name of, but we were filming, and it's Arnold Schwarzenegger was having there was a scene where they're in the jungle and they get attacked, and it's Marco, Wilt, and Arnold, and they get attacked by these I don't know if they were warriors. No, they're like jungle people, right? Well, there's one scene where Arnold cut somebody's head off, one of these guys. And in order to get the shot like they wanted, the director, Richard Fleischer, had the cameraman, the DP, put the camera down low to the ground, right? And they couldn't get they tried the ladder and all this stuff because they wanted to have the head, you know, flying in the air. So what they did was the director asked Wilt, could you help with this, Wilt? You have any ideas? And Wilt was, yeah. And so everybody knows that Wilt was famous for the single role shot in basketball, right? You know, and George Gervin used it later and a lot of other people. But anyway, Wilt took this head, the head that had been chopped off of the jungle guy, and he flipped it up in the air, you know, because he's standing 7 feet. So when he stretches his arm and then he flips it, the head went about 11, 12 feet in the air. And it's spinning and spinning. And they had two cameras rolling, and one is in slow motion. And you'll see this scene in the movie if you watch it. And the head's flipping and flipping, and it came down. And there's what you call a mat box on the front of the camera, a mat box which keeps the sun's rays and stuff, which stops for reflections and stuff in front of the lens. Well, this head fell, and it fell directly inside the mat box, right onto the camera lens, like it was a basketball hoop. It was so classic, man. It was classic Wilt Chamberlain. It's like he did the finger roll in the head. They just wanted it to go up in the air. And it went up in the air and came down and fell right inside the camera Matchbox, man. That was like one of the most incredible memories, you know, that I have with Wilt, because it was like the Twilight Zone, you know. It was outside of basketball. Here we are in the jungle with cameras and mosquitoes and flies, and, you know, he had on this big suit, and it still came back to basketball, you know. So it was that was a great memory, man. Things like that, you know, with Wilt. I mean, again, he's a special person. And some of the memories of him telling me different things about his life and things that had happened, you know, like them holding Martin Luther King's funeral up until he got there because his plane was late and different stuff. But very wow. few people knew what an impact Wilt had during the civil rights movement, you know, because he was quiet about it and he didn't make a lot of noise. But everyone talks about Muhammad Ali because Ali was out there and you know, that was his thing. He was loud and boisterous and the whole draft and all of that stuff. But behind the scenes, Wilt Chamberlain was very supportive behind Ali and Martin Luther King and a lot of the things that they were doing. You know, and Malcolm and everybody, you know, he was a supporter because he was large during that time. So what he said meant a lot to a lot of people. So.
I'd like to know more about that because it reminds me of when I was learning about the history of Madam C.T. Walker. She was the same mm-hmm. way, you know, one of the most recognized first black female millionaire. How she was very supportive
right.
of love, Marcus Garvey. And all of them, and I was like, wow, these mm-hmm. are people we should, you know, be learning about away from school, because we know schools and universities aren't going to teach us our real history that we need to know.
That's right. That's right.
So
that's right.
He definitely needs to be. He definitely needs to be spoken upon about Wilt Chamberlain.
Oh yeah, now Wilt is one of those that people only talk about his basketball and they talk about the women, you know, the 20,000 thing. But Wilt had a lot of deep side. You know, Wilt is one of the reasons, and that's how I met Nina Simone. You know, when Nina came back to America, you know, for a while, Wilt introduced me to her. Between him and her, somehow I ended up becoming her sort of road manager here in the States for at least for the time that she was on the West Coast. And that was really interesting, you know, because when you talk about two of the legends of history, you know, black history and the civil rights movement, you know, Nina and Wilt were incredible. And they both had a lot in common too. You know, you couldn't tell them nothing. Yeah, they both headstrong and strong individuals. Yeah, but Nina Simone, was, you know, that was one of the, when you ask about one of the greatest memories, sitting in the room with Nina Simone and Wilt Chamberlain, that was Twilight Zone-ish, you know, for sure. It's
Ooh,
just somebody
I'd like to hear about that. What was that conversation like? Do you remember? I'd definitely like to hear about this.
It was about money. Nina was about her money, and she didn't. She had been, and this is Nina speaking. She had been cheated by so many white people that she wanted her money up front, and Wilt introduced me to her because he told her that he had someone that could take care of her while she was in the States and make sure that she got paid, because she was playing the troubadour in West Los Angeles, West Hollywood here in L.A. And it was a nightclub that was owned by Doug Trumbull. Was it Doug? Yeah. And he was – no, Doug – God, what was Doug's name? Doug, I can't remember his last name right now, but everybody that knows. And, you know, so, but it's a classic nightclub. You know, everybody from Pep has played there from the 60s on up, you know, and it's in West Hollywood. So you know, part of my gig was just making sure that she got her money up front and all of these type of things, you know, that and so I got to know her over the course of about a month, which was really wonderful.
Ooh, wow, man, you have a very beautiful, wonderful Black history period.
God has been good, man. You know, I mean, again, when we talk about our legends, you know, I have been blessed on the film side. I mean, you know, with a lot of the hip hop rap world, the Dolemite, you know, Rudy Ray Moore, who was sampled to death and was one of the first rappers, right? I spent 20 years managing him, and I learned a lot of film from Rudy, traveling with him, you know, and I was doing this simultaneously while I was, you know, managing Wilt's affairs and different things, you know. So between Dolemite and Wilt Chamberlain, it was an interesting time, for sure.
And I also see where you've worked, produced music videos for, like, Tina Turner, Paul McCartney. Wow, what was that like?
Hammer.
Hammer.
Yeah, I was the first African-American to be head of production at Capitol Records. And that was interesting because, you know, getting that job, I ended up being called Uncle Tom by a lot of Black people, and I got called a token by a lot of white people. He doesn't know what he's doing. They just had to hire somebody Black, you know. So it was an interesting time. I mean, of course, I did know, but they wouldn't have never hired me if I didn't know what I was doing, because I came from a commercial production background. I had a company called Blackbird Films, which was the first African-American-owned commercial production company in America. And I had 10 of the top directors in the country, Bill Duke, Stan Lathan, Kevin Hooks, Gordon Parks, Elaine Head, and many others. Michael Peters, back in that time. And so I went to Capitol, and that was quite interesting because I was part of a team. I have to give the credit to Mick Kleber, who was also a Vietnam vet. He was a Marine, and I was a Vietnam vet in the Navy. And between seeing my Vietnam veteran background and dealing and my commercial production background, he chose me to give that job to, and the honor of being the first, you know, African-American to hold that gig. And I have to credit the NAACP for bringing it to the industry's attention and trying to make a change, making the record companies make a change. Because on MTV was only Michael Jackson and Rick James at that time. And it was nobody Black working behind the scenes. And do you know, G, that is something, when you see all these awards, man, when you look at the NAACP awards and BET and MTV and all of that, none of them have ever mentioned my name or anything. Not that, you know, I need awards, but just for your audience to know part of history, I was the cat that made that change and brought a lot of African Americans and females into the music video world and behind the scenes, and opened it up for a lot of people who are working today. Even at the Antoine Fuqua's and the F. Gary Gray's, who just directed Fast and Furious 6 and stuff. I gave Gary his first gig. You know, I discovered all of those cats when they were trying to get attention and break into the business, you know. So that's part of, you know, history that is a fact, and very few people know that. But, you know, I'm happy to have done it, you know, because it was a good time, you know, in history. And I have to credit Mick Kleber, who was not Black, and, you know, for recognizing me, my talent, and giving me that job.
Wow. You know, that's definitely need to be known throughout history as well, because your life and your span and your timeline has been a monumental one. And I could see one day
someone that looks like you come from where you come from, learning of your story will inspire them to be, if not greater, or just as great as you are. And I think your story is very important. And I'm glad that you're sharing with you on this platform with us right now so we can get a better understanding of who you are, because your name needs to be spoken in history too. I'm just a firm believer of that, because we need your presence and your essence to be out there. So I thank you for sharing.
Well, thank you, sir.
Great directors. You know, you're talking about your Forrest Whitakers, your Bill Duke,
yes,
and Tekku Kwe. Like,
yeah,
these guys are really slept on in Hollywood. These,
yeah.
Not only are they great directors, they're great actors, especially,
yep,
Forrest Whitaker. I don't think there's a role
Amen.
That he cannot play.
I know. He is like a, he's definitely, I mean, and you know, Forrest came to me before he had ever directed anything. Do you know, first of all, Bill Duke, right? And this is a bit of history, trivia that people don't know that I'll share with you. I gave Bill Duke his first assistant director job on a Dolomite movie that I produced.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, man. Bill Duke, you know, as great as he is today, I gave him his first AD job, you know. And so it's like, it was on a film called Rude. Yeah, and it was Dolomite in concert, man. And Cliff Rockmore was the director, and I was the producer. And, yeah, so just, but you're right, you know, I mean, in different things. And I'm just glad to have touched, you know, these guys' lives, man, you know. And also, I got to say something else, too. You're familiar with the new film Mudbone, right?
I think I heard
Netflix.
About that.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
it's
really hot. Sorry, Mary J. Blige. Well, the writer of that picture, right? Because people are down on Dr. Cosby and stuff, but she came out of the Cosby Hanks, the Hanks Miller scholarship program that was funded by Bill Cosby, man, for African Americans and people of color to get scholarships, writing scholarships to go to USC. I got one, you know, so I always thank Dr. Cosby for that, you know, because he was one of the few people who did put his money to work for helping people and giving back and pushing education and pushing betterment and achievement and all those things. So regardless of what anybody wants to say about Cosby and all that, you know, what was happening, I have no idea, no information on none of that. I can't speak on it at all. But I do know that you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And Dr. Cosby has done a lot of good stuff, man. You know, so that's just the way that is, you know. But anyway, I just wanted to make a point that the lady who wrote Mudbone is a graduate out of the Hanks Miller scholarship program. And Doreen Hamilton ran that, and a lot of other people came through that program. So it just goes to show you, you know, it's like we all have to get our start somewhere, you know, and each one teach one, and we all, you know, stand on each other's shoulders.
Absolutely, I agree. I absolutely agree. Man, I could talk to you all day long, but I know our time is
Well, thank you for having me, sir.
No,
really.
Thank you. It is my honor, my pleasure to meet you on this journey. You are a monumental figure in history, and I appreciate I had the moment in time to sit down with you and to listen to your wonderful story. And I know, once this goes out there, people are going to be inspired of all ages and races and cultures. And you're just so humble about everything. That's the most beautiful part about your life, is that you live in the moment. You were great. You're still great. And yet still, you're just a down-to-home person, down-to-earth. You can't beat that, in my opinion. Absolutely. You are amazing and outstanding spiritual being on this planet. And I really appreciate you. I really do.
Thank you, sir. And I look forward to talking to you again sometime. And what city are you in?
Actually, I'm in Augusta, Georgia right now, but I'm from Atlanta.
Okay.
I've been in Atlanta a lot, but yeah, home of the Masters and where they play the golf tournament.
Right. That's right. Okay. Well, I look forward
James Brown, seeing
you sometime. All right. Take care, sir.
All right. Thank you. Take care. Hope you have a good evening.
Bye-bye.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're wrapping up the show with the Foster Quarter. Man, he is awesome, amazing. Hit that rewind button and listen to this wonderful interview again, and you are listening to some beautiful moments of Black history, divine Black history, I would like to say. And be of the peace, be of the light. See you all later.